Good morning, Glass. Good morning, Keith. Welcome back.
Tell me some stories about Hawaii, Mick. Hurry, because this forecast is dragging me down.
Well, you just had to watch a little bit of the Century Tournament of Champions to get a little aloha spirit. That is a beautiful setting, and it doesn't get any better than the views they show from the Plantation Golf Course.
Now, if you did miss it last week, don't worry. We have action for you tonight at Waialae Country Club on lovely Oahu in Honolulu. It's the second stop here of the tour in Hawaii. And we have primetime coverage all weekend long. So after a hard day at work, you can sit back by the fireplace and watch Hawaii in the background.
Golf shot of the tournament, Dustin Johnson on 12, almost acing a 420-yard par 4.
Hit it to about 3 inches, didn't he? Wonderfully.
That was impressive.
Wonderfully. So was his seven-shot victory. My goodness.
Yeah, I missed it by two. I said 22 under, and he decided to go 8 under on the last day, which is, again, pretty impressive given
best round of the week.
He put the foot down on the pedal on Sunday, didn't he?
And cruised home to victory. He's pretty good. Number one player in the world and played like it. So that's good stuff there. Keith is dying to ask you a question.
Well, Mick, we talked before we got on because we've been talking all morning about the weather and the forecast and all that. What about the city and trash and stuff like that? How do you guys handle your part of this for tomorrow? And also about the Monday holiday?
Right. So Monday holiday is always, at least Christmas and New Year's, delay the trash and recycling schedule by a day, and for weather purposes, we watch a couple of different things for any delay in trash pickup, and mostly it's weather driven by temperature. If the wind chill's 10 degrees, minus 10 or below minus 10, then our crews stay in the garage until the weather gets above that number, and then they'll go out. For snow conditions, they just wait until our plows have gone out and done their work, and so there may be a delay. Of course, all those delays are announced on the radio and on social media so we can keep our residents aware of any delays in service. But that's the typical way that decisions are made, driven by weather-related incidents.
I think you wanted to know, too, about
what do we do in preparation for a storm coming up.
Right.
And thankfully, with all the technology that we have, we kind of know it's supposed to come in early in the morning tomorrow or really late this evening, and we'll have crews out pre-treating the roads to try to limit any ice accumulation first. Then they'll wait till enough snowfall gets on the roads to where the pre-treatment work is no longer effective for removing the snow, and then they'll come with the plows after that and plow the routes. Because it's an overnight snow, that's actually kind of good. It gives us more access to the streets without a lot of traffic, and that'll give us a chance to get more efficiently through that pass. But, of course, this snow is supposed to potentially go for, 24 straight hours. So we'll have to go out numerous times to keep the roads up. But we're prepared for that. And first thing you'll see is the roads being pre-treated in advance of the oncoming storm later tonight.
And how important is that pre-treating process, Mick? And how you won't know this answer, but you will. How do you do it, an hour before, 2 hours before? How long does it last? When should people expect to see the trucks out? Or I guess is what I'm trying to ask you in a completely terrible roundabout way is, if people see the trucks, is that time to really start paying attention to it?
I think that, and I don't know the actual answer to how much in advance. I think it's a factor of the amount of time they know it takes to get out on all the roads in advance of a storm, so we want to make sure the pretreatment's down first. I don't know how long the material lasts, so I'll have to get that. It's a great question to ask. I'd like to know that myself. But let's just say that they're going to go out enough in advance that all roads are pre-treated in time for that first round of whatever it might be. It might be ice, might be snow. And it helps melt the snow, or it keeps the ice from accumulating, so keep the slick surfaces down as much as possible, much like you would pre-treat your driveway or your sidewalk if you anticipated some ice formation coming along, so that people coming up to your house don't get hurt. We have the same kind of approach to the roads and public infrastructure that we're responsible for. Get out ahead of it if we can.
Mick, on that topic, what are the rules for me in a residential neighborhood on my sidewalks and snow removal, and what are the business rules?
Yeah, everybody's got 24 hours to remove snow or ice from their sidewalk or any public, I guess we don't have trails in most residential areas, but so sidewalks are the public right-of-way that you're responsible for taking care of. So you have 24 hours after that. We could issue you a citation for not keeping up your sidewalk. We could issue you a fine. We try to limit that. Rather, we just like the public to know that it's your responsibility to take care of those things within 24 hours.
Mick Renheisen's our guest this morning. He's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And speaking of city business, big a note, at least in the paper the other day, I believe Ernest Rollins had the article about annexation and the lawsuit moving forward. Tell us what has gone on.
Another step in the legal process. The state filed some type of a motion. Don't ask me, amateur lawyer, to explain exactly what the nature of it is, other than it was an attempt to try to cease our lawsuit from existing and terminate it, and it didn't work. The judge ruled against that, so it just means that the lawsuit continues. There's months, if not a year or more, of legal maneuvering that will have to take place, so I don't think anybody should jump up and down and worry that there's any imminent re-engagement of the annexation discussion at the moment. But it is a step that indicates that the state can't deny that they did not get their motion granted, and the city's lawsuit continues, I guess, is the best way to summarize that. We'll also note that as the state legislature is now in short session, there are at least five annexation bills tracking in the state house that we'll be watching. A couple of them are targeted, I think, directly at us, and for that matter, any other city, because they look to try to almost eliminate annexation by cities, which seems to be a little bit almost incomprehensible. I don't know how people thought we got cities established and boundaries changed over decades and centuries. By just shutting it off now seems to be a pretty arbitrary maneuver. So we'll see how those particular bills advance or not at the state level.
And when this these bills move, do you have lobbyists? Do you have how do you make your voice heard for what you want to see happen? You being the city.
That's a great question, one we've talked about a lot. I do believe we're going to engage a lobbyist this year because we've seen that there are particular pieces of legislation targeted at us, particularly in the annexation world. There could be others that we want to track. And generally speaking, without a lobbyist, most of our department heads are watching their respective areas and are working with their respective professional associations to watch for things. There's a entity statewide that watches out for those things. It used to be called IACT, Indiana Association of Cities and Towns, which most of us are members of, and they watch for legislation and they send out emails and alerts to tell us if there's something that's going through committee that we need to pay attention to. But numerous ways that we watch for it, given the nature of the annexation in issues coming up, I think we're likely to engage a lobbyist soon.
And is that something that you've put in the budget for this year? Is that retrofitted? I know there's money for it. It's just where does it come from?
Right. We do have some sort of general legal counsel monies budgeted for things like this that you can't anticipate if you're going to need or not. And if you don't use them, great, that money reverts. If you do need it, then you have it in your budget for that purpose.
And people always wonder about how that's up and running and doing all that.
Mick, there's a story on today's paper about the master plan and some talk about
taller
buildings and compact and all of that. How far are we away from that master plan?
Well, my hope is that we're within the month going to get City Council's approval of the comprehensive master plan. And remember, that's a guiding document to how our built environment will look. And then that follows with a unified development ordinance. Those are the actual rules, if you will, that developers will have to abide by as they request to build projects in our community. So that could take another 13 to 15 months to go through the same kind of process: development, passage by the Plan Commission, passage by City Council, amendments by either or, create additional time frames in that cycle. So this is the first step. I think the council's pretty close to wrapping up. They're part of the review process. If they significantly amend the document, I believe it has to go back before the Plan Commission. I don't know if they've done that significant amount yet to find out if it does require that final approval process back to Plan Commission, kind of like the House and the Senate reconciling bills, if you will. So we'll know about that next week when they entertain their last amendments, and hopefully that'll be about it for the end of the month, and then onward to the Unified Development Ordinance.
Now, Monday, a big day in the city, a day on, not a day off. What's the city got going?
Martin Luther King Day, and we invite the public to join us at the Buskirk Chumley Theater at 7 o'clock. We'll have a keynote speaker for the event. It'll be Reverend Harold Middlebrook. He's a personal friend of Dr. King's and an active advocate for civil rights. In addition to Reverend Middlebrook's remarks, there'll be performances by the Fairview Elementary School Choir and the IU African American Choral Ensemble. And also, and this is a pretty cool event every year, to the presentation of the 2018 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Legacy Award. So there'll be a reception preceding this program at 6 p.m. The event starts at 7. The reception, the program, all this is free and open to the public. Usually a great crowd attends the Martin Luther King celebration, so we hope to see people there on Monday. And let's hope the weather is done with whatever it's doing and makes it easier for people to get out and participate in this event.
You're going to need a jacket. You're going to need a bigger jacket. It's going to be chilly, chilly for all of that. Mick Renheisen's our guest this morning, the city of Bloomington's deputy mayor. And again, the city's website will help out with a lot of those details. We talked to Bette Savage yesterday about the great opportunities, a day on and not a day off, the day of community service. There's plenty of indoor things you can do on Monday, and you'll need to do so. Wrap us up, Keith.
Well, one last thing, Mick, we got to get a nomination in for Women's History Month. There's some deadlines.
Yeah, hurry up and do that, right?
Yeah, we do. January 19th is the deadline. The awards include Women of the Year, Emerging Leader, and the Toby Strout Lifetime Achievement Awards. Nominations are accepted year-round, but for 2018, if you want to nominate somebody for one of these awards, you got to do it by the 19th of January, bloomington.am.gov/CSW, or call Sue Owens at 812-349-3468.
And people that want to get signed up for office, it's an election year, right? You've got to do that here in the next month or so.
I think that's right. February sounds about like the deadline coming up. We'll check on that for you and try to get you.
Yeah, we know we've got a little time there. And by the way, if you're thinking about this and you're going to leave it to the last minute, you should probably rethink it. Anyhow, this is something you need to know, that deadline, if you are thinking of joining.
I missed trivia last week.
You did. In your absence, I did well, and I did okay, and then I was poor.
All right.
I got the first question without even multiple choice.
Oh, okay.
I struggled.
You may get it right again. We're kind of reminding people about some things, including proper placement for the new trash and recyclable carts. We continue to try to educate folks about how this is different from the old system. So which of these statements is true? Carts need to be A, at least 2 feet from the curb and 3 feet from vehicles, or B, on your driveway or a neighbor's driveway for easier access, or C, 4 feet away from mailboxes and 10 feet away from vehicles, or D, anywhere in your yard as long as you leave them out by 5 a.m.?
Well, the most reasonable one was they got to be separated, and they got to be at the end of your driveway.
I don't know how I'm going to take out my measuring tape and decide what is 2 feet or 3 feet or 4 feet. We need to have a clearer plan to make this
that
help.
That little robot arm has to be able to get in.
Not everybody has a driveway, so I'm going to eliminate that one.
I'll put it in my neighbor's yard.
I'll go with A.
A.
That's actually C. 4 feet away from your mailboxes and 10 feet away from vehicles.
I don't have a
mailbox.
Why
these specific these distances? Because the arms that come out on mechanized trucks, you know, they reach out and pinch or grab these carts, and so they need room to do that without impingement. So we don't want to damage anybody's car.
When in doubt, give yourself more space than less space.
Both that's failures.
And the easy way to do 4 feet or 10 feet, if you have to, is walk off steps, like a yard is a long step, or walk off with your feet and assume your feet are relatively a foot long or close to that, and just that way you'll get a general guideline of keeping those.
Pretend it's a holding penalty, Keith.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be out there
marching
off the distance.
That's right, Keith.
5 yards.
You're officiating. You can figure out 5 yards.
That's right.
You can go up and down the street and throw flags.
I measure for everybody.
You can throw flags in people's yard. That's a illegal formation.
There you go.
That'll be $5.
That's one dimension. Here's another one. I know we're throwing numbers out at everybody today, but you know, how far apart do the bins need to be from each other? So we've asked you to keep them away from mailboxes and vehicles. How about from each other? How much distance? A foot, 2 feet, 3 feet, or 4 feet?
I'll go with four.
I'm going to go with four just to four.
Yeah, 4 feet, same way as from the mailboxes, again, to give room for the arms to get in there.
I put one
on the
side of my driveway.
Kick
it through
the
uprights. Here's a new question category. We're going to ask these on a regular basis.
I like it.
Because we are celebrating our bicentennial this year.
200 years.
200 years, baby. Don't get to do that many often, so we're going to talk about that regularly as the course of the year goes on. So here's the first question on the bicentennial trivia that we'll introduce. Monroe County native David Van Buskirk had what distinction as a soldier in the Civil War?
Ooh.
Is it A, he was the first Monroe County resident in the Union Army? B, he was the tallest soldier? C, he was the shortest soldier, or D, the oldest soldier?
Tallest, B.
Whoa, Keith didn't even hesitate there. I'm going
with
Team Keith. Let's go.
He is right.
Nice, Keith.
David Van Buskirk was 6'10" tall. I mean, think about this. This is in the 1800s.
It's a big target. Yeah.
You don't be standing up to say, follow me.
He was the tallest soldier in the Union Army. He grew up near Gosport, and after his death in 1886, the Bloomington Republican Progress republished his obituary and noted, in quotes, "Few men have been more respected and honored than Big Dave Van Buskirk." So, tallest soldier in the Union Army at 6'10".
Is he any of a relation to the Buskirk, that the theater? The name of
That's a great question.
What's a Van Buskirk? I didn't know if they dropped that, kept that. I've got too many. I'm putting you up against the wall today. I apologize for this. I'm just thinking.
That's okay.
I'm thinking
out loud.
It
makes me want to go find out more about some of the things you ask.
No, I didn't mean to give you homework for the weekend, but
And how'd he do for the IU basketball team?
Yeah, right. He started the
team. Yeah, exactly. Well, before we started basketball, actually.
That's a good point. And that was a long, long time ago. Good. So I like this. You could even go heavy on the 200-year trivia. I think that would be very
good. Well, there's your first question. You both got it right. So you want to know in bicentennial trivia.
Boom. Next time when you come on, you need to know what they call the 400-year centennial.
Quad.
I would think, but I'm not sure. I'll find that out.
Well, we won't be around to celebrate it, Mick, so take your time on that one. Thanks for your time, as always. Go to the city's website if you have any information about trash, if you have any information about weather or anything that goes with it. The website's great for all that. And be safe this weekend, Mick.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Take care.
Mick Van Eisen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington and joins us every Thursday morning just after 8:35.